B-Pod Studios.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
We're back at it for another installment of Talkin' Rock. And as the title of the episode so aptly describes, Rudy Zarzo, bass legend, is on the program today before he jets off, or I guess boats off, on the Jericho Cruise. I got to get on one of those cruises one of these days. I know a ship rocked just came in, so I don't know. There's all sorts of cruises that take place now. The 70,000 tons of metal, the Kiss Cruise. Kid Rock used to do his cruise every single year as well, but I don't think he's done one in quite some time. Now that the pandemic's over, too, a lot of bands are hopping back on him. So Rudy tells me about cruises and some of the ones he's done in the past. We talk about this new song, which is not only a cool song, but the video is so touching. I can't hold on. This is a song that they found in an iPod. I don't know, 18 years later after writing it. So we'll get into that coming up here in just a little bit. David Ellison, of course, former Megadeth bass player, actually gave me a question to ask Rudy. We talk about that. A lot about Randy Rhoads. And Rick Rubin recently said something that kind of perked my ears up. He said Paul McCartney was his number one bassist. So I talked to Rudy about that as well. And a band he played in with John 5? All that's coming up today on Talkin' Rock. You can also watch this interview at WRIF.com and the Riff TV section, or just punch up WRIF.com/meltdown. As we were joined by Rudy, and we were off and running. And there he is, the legend. Rudy, how you doing?
I'm blessed. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. You're going on the Jericho Cruise later this week, aren't you?
I am leaving Wednesday morning, and then we get on board on Thursday, and we come home on Monday. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Chris Jericho is a great guy. I mean, you've obviously done a lot of these cruises in the past, right?
I've done a couple, but with a different, you know, this is the first time it's going to be a boat full of wrestlers. A lot of oil.
I didn't think about that before. Well, you're going to have a great time. I know that Shiprock just came in, right? They just finished that one.
I guess so. Yeah, there's a few of those around. I did a couple with the Guess Who, and one of them was the 60s, the Flower Power, whatever, Chris, which is interesting. And then we turned around, and we did the 70s, which is the Romance Cruise. And the difference between both of them was the 60s, you had, like, everybody on those little rascals, you know, those little, you know.
Yeah, the
like
scooters,
you see at Costco.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Scooters, yeah. And the 70s, they were still on walkers. They haven't made the transition to the,
Well, you just celebrated, what, your 72nd birthday a few months back, didn't you?
That's right. I'm making the transition there. I'm practicing. I'm getting my arms ready for it.
You still enjoy touring and hopping up on stage?
Oh, yeah. I mean, now more than ever, because, you know, I happen to be home. I'm back with Quiet Riot. And, you know, it's everything that you ever saw me do in any other band. I always brought a little bit of Quiet Riot or a whole lot of Quiet Riot with me, like in the case of playing with Whitesnake. But I always ask. I never take it for granted. You know, I always ask, how much, what would you like me to do on stage? And if they tell me, like in Coverdale's case, it says, be yourself. Thank you.
Yeah, Coverdale seems like that kind of guy. I've never met him in person, but I've interviewed him a bunch of times, and he seems like he just goes with anything, right?
Well, you know, basically what worked between him and me as far as communicating what he expected of me as a member of Whitesnake was the fact that Whitesnake was the opening band for Quiet Riot in 1984. So he had seen me a few times on stage.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So he kind of knew what to expect. You know, it's funny you mentioned that, you know, going back home and stuff. I was just texting with David Ellison, and he asked me, he wanted me to talk to you about, you recently said you're getting the joy back in playing your bass again, and he wanted you to expand on that. And I guess maybe some of it might have to do with being back in Quiet Riot or no?
Yeah, it has a lot to do with being quiet. I mean, it's not that I had lost the joy. I actually did lose it once. When Randy passed away over 40 years ago, you know, I was much younger. I didn't have the knowledge or experience or have been around enough to really know much about life and understand that the responsibility of us left behind is to celebrate the memory and the music, in our case as musicians, of those who have passed on. Mm. I did not know that. I was just trying to run away from going on stage every night without Randy being there and everything that he brought, you know, his musicianship and his friendship. And it's Randy Rhoads. Come on, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and losing that. I lost the joy. And I was not the only one. I would say just about everybody in the band. I would say everybody in the band, you know, brought Tommy and Ozzy and Sharon and everybody. We were never the same again. But after 40 years, you know, I have learned that it's our responsibility to celebrate the memory, which is this is what I do when I go on stage, or even as we're having a conversation right now. It's not about me. It's about celebrating the legacy of Quiet Riot and the memory of Randy Rhoads, Frankie Benelli, and Kevin DeBrow.
Yeah, Ned, I saw that documentary, I think last year or sometime, the Randy Rhoads documentary that his family put out. That was really good.
Actually, his family did not put it out.
Oh, I thought his family did. Oh, no, I'm trying to think. Who put that out? Refresh my memory, because somebody wasn't involved. Well, Ozzy wasn't involved, right? For sure.
No. Nobody was involved. Whoever put it out, I haven't met the person. I do hear, because I haven't watched it, just because the family did not really support it.
Gotcha.
I hear really great things about it, which to me, that's the most important thing. You know, it puts Randy in the right light. Of course, it's an aggregate of documentaries previously done and available on other documentaries. It's kind of like, okay, let's find everything that has ever been filmed about Randy Rhoads, you know, during documentaries or anything, and just put a story behind it, put it in a storyboard so there's a continuity. And that takes a lot of work. And I'm glad that somebody did it. But the family feels a certain way about it, and I am not going to speak on their behalf. Yeah. What I'm going to say is it was not done with the family's approval.
That's right. I remember that now, because I did watch it. You know, and listen, I was about 13 or 14, I think, maybe even 12, I can't remember, when I first discovered Ozzy, and then Randy was killed not that long after. And so for me, watching this documentary showed a lot about the stuff leading up to him joining Quiet Riot and that, and how there was just like bar owners and other musicians around the area. And like I said, I grew up as a kid in Buffalo. I wasn't in Los Angeles on the Strip, so I didn't really know a lot about this stuff and what Randy had, you know, had kind of impressed all these people before joining Quiet Riot. So it was kind of like a background story to him just getting started too.
Yes, it is. You know, and the more information there is about Randy Rhoads out there, the better. So people can really understand his contribution.
Yeah. So let's talk about a Quiet Riot. I can't hold on. You know, that video is very stirring. Talk about that video, first of all.
Regina Benelli, Frankie's wife, who also directed the documentary, Now You're Here, There's No Way Back, you know, the Quiet Riot documentary. Mm. She did that. And as a filmmaker, she films everything, you know, especially very special occasions. And I was not aware that she was filming when Frankie told me about him having been diagnosed, just like at that moment, with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. You know, he took me to his garden at his home and told me about it. And she even filmed when Frankie gave me a 1966 Fender Precision, which I have right here next to me. Mm. And he presented that to me, and it was really, such a beautiful instrument. And I mean, it's a classic, you know, vintage instrument. And I couldn't play it for months. Mm. Because I associated his cancer with the bass, you know. And then, of course, just like everything else, you have to find the light in everything. And finding the light was finding the joy of playing that instrument. and the memories of Frankie giving it to me, not with the cancer, but as a 50-year-old friendship and being bandmates many times, you know, because, you know, before we recorded the Mental Health record, we have been playing for over 10 years now, struggling. And finally, here we are. You know, I just went in for one song originally, Thunderbird, because I was still a member of Ozzy at that time. And to be playing with Frankie, that just completed full circle everything for me, you know, in that recording session.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Yeah. And then Alex finds this song, if I'm not mistaken, like it said at the beginning, on this iPod, I Can't Hold On. Correct me if I'm wrong, it was pretty much, it was bare bones. Your parts weren't on there, correct?
No, they were not there. I mean, he recorded that as a demo, that song, he recorded the music, gave it to Kevin to write and sing some vocals for a demo. And at some point, Frankie's drums came on it. And by the time that I got the copy of it to track, it had everything on it except for the bass. So I was my own engineer. I tracked it right here in this room. Mm. And I was I did my own engineering like I always do, you know, every time I record here. And, you know, you produce yourself, you get ideas, you try different things. But what really helped me was the fact that I had done a few records already with Frankie and Kevin. And I have been a member of Choir Rock since 1978 on and off. And so I know what the roots of Choir Rock is musically, you know, the boundaries, but also you want to stretch out a little bit and show some kind of growth and progression and all of that. So I brought all the elements that I knew and I really gave it a lot of thought to what my contribution to the track was going to be.
Now, I don't know how to even ask this. What was your thoughts the first time you watched that video or did you help put that together? I mean, you mentioned his widow and stuff.
Yeah, that's a great question. The sequence of events happened is, okay, so I officially rejoined the band late 2021. And so, you know, Alex and I, we started looking at into the future. It's like, you know, if we're going to release some music, let's see what we have. So I was looking on my catalog. He was looking on his catalog. And that's how he rediscovered that song. Mm. It's like, oh, he had forgotten about it. There it was. And he sent it to me and he says, what do you think? And I go, wow, this is phenomenal. You know, even just guitars and vocals and drums, that was just amazing. You know, so I'm listening to it, and it's just like I'm being emotionally stirred. As a matter of fact, there's a part in that video that is actually me listening to that song for the first time. And so it was, I thought it was one of the best things Quiet Riot had ever done. You know, and now that I listen to the track as a whole, I'm going like, wow, this is one of Kevin's best performances and overall everybody.
Yeah. And then, but like I said, but watching that video for the first time, I mean, I was moved and I didn't, you know, I met Frankie and I knew Kevin a little bit from my early days in radio and stuff. And, you know, and he's been gone a long time and I'm watching that video myself. And the first thing that kind of struck me was like, maybe like the Johnny Cash Hurt video, but in a way different way, of course. You've seen that video, correct?
Oh, yes, I've seen it.
Yeah, I mean, this was like...
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it.
This was like a real emotional type video like that.
Yeah, because it takes you through, you know, the first section of the song is about Kevin, and then he passes, and then Frankie is celebrating Kevin's memory by going back and putting the band together, and then he's diagnosed with cancer. So you have like this whole... the cycle begins again, you know, and this one really detailed because Regina was there to capture those moments, you know. But the ending is very uplifting.
Yeah.
And it's the ending, and you know, to me, it really represents the reason why we carry on, you know, as a band, you know, Quiet Riot. And it was basically, you know, when I rejoined the band in late 2021, it was, you have Alex Grossi, who had been playing with Kevin for 20 years, you know, or in Quiet Riot for 20 years, because
right.
he kept playing with Quiet Riot after Kevin passed away. So Kevin picked him and groomed him, even as a young player on all things Quiet Riot, you know, the consciousness, what the band is about. And then you have Jizzy, who came into the band, Jizzy Pearl, and picked by Frankie after Kevin passed away. And then you have Johnny Kelly on drums, who Frankie picked to originally sub for him. And then when he realized that he was not going to be able to play for a while because of his condition, he asked Johnny to stay on and, you know, be a permanent drummer until Frankie could actually go out there and do it, because he never lost the, you know, the hope of getting back on stage again, because and play drums. That's Frankie. You know, I first met Frankie. Actually, I saw him play the night before I met him. So yeah, if there's anything you can, you know, describe, any word that describes Frankie will be drummer.
Yeah. Yeah, Johnny Kelly's a friend of mine. We're both brothers in hockey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. I love Johnny.
Yeah.
Really do.
It's kind of cool that, you know, you rejoined the band and you really are the gateway to the heyday of Quiet Riot. You know what I'm saying? It's like when people go there, they're seeing Quiet Riot. And like you said, you're kind of keeping this music alive. I mean, of course, with Jizzy and Johnny and Alex as well. But you were really there when Quiet Riot took over the world.
Actually, I was there even before Quiet Riot.
Right.
You know, let's say 78. You know, and I took away from the band two elements that I think are fundamental for any successful group. One of them is what Randy Rhoads brought to the band, which was musical integrity. Mm. Integrity. He was born into a musical family. His mom and dad, music professors. They have a school. The family still has a school, Musonia, of music. Randy was a musician before he even joined a rock band. Mm. I'm talking about, you know, he knew how to play classical guitar, and he side-read. And then he became a teacher. When I first joined the band, he was already a teacher at Musonia. So the musical integrity was paramount to the level of no other musician I've ever played with. Just because this is what Randy was born to do. It wasn't like, I don't even think he had a choice in it. Mm. He just flowed into it. He's born and then into a musical family, and he's a musician, you know. And I mean, to the point that he made certain choices and decisions in his career based on his musical integrity. Just to encapsulate what I just said. When he was basically, there was a demand by the record company that Randy would record Speak of the Devil, which was the re-recordings of Black Sabbath songs by Ozzy Osbourne.
Wait a second, hold on for 1 second. So that was already determined before Randy died that you guys were going to do a live Sabbath record?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. Okay, all right, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. And not only a live record, but a live video of us recording that.
And if I'm not mistaken, that's because Sabbath put out that Live Evil. Is that right? So Ozzy had a...
Well, actually, they were working on it. But then again, it was not Ozzy's. It was the record company.
Okay, got you. Okay.
Really, you know. And so Randy quit the band. He gave Ozzy, you know, notice that he was going to go back to school, get his degree. It wasn't like I'm going to quit the band. I'm going to put my own band together and keep doing this. No, it was like, I'm going back to school. I'm going to get my master's degree in music. That's all they care. you know, and then he died, you know, and to actually watch Randy's integrity at the level of being a local legend in Los Angeles prior to joining Ozzy, and then me joining Randy and Ozzy, and watch him with this ultimate level of musical integrity as a member of Ozzy after he had received the Best New Guitar Player Award. I mean, he was already a bona fide rock star, living legend by the time that he died. By the time that he actually gave notice to Ozzy that he was going to go back to school. I learned that. And that's been engraved in me ever since. So wherever I go, I bring that. Also, when Randy left Quiet Riot, the band ceased to exist as a band. It became Dubrow, which is Kevin put his band together. And I got to tell you, his level of tenacity at a time when the music that he was doing was nowhere to be seen as far as what was coming from England, because we're talking 40 something years ago. There was no social network that you could see. Yes, there's a Def Leppard and an Iron Maiden and a Saxon and a Motorhead making it, really kicking butt in England and Europe. Nobody knew that. I knew that because those were some of the opening bands for Ozzy.
Yeah.
I knew about Def Leppard kicking butt. Yeah, it was easy. I would see them every night. I knew about Motorhead kicking butt. I would see them every night. We toured with Saxon in Europe. I saw Iron Maiden in England when I was there. I saw everything that was going on. So what we would do is Randy and I would come on a break back home to L.A. First thing we would do, go to Kevin's place, pick him up, take him to the Rainbow, and give him a report. Mainly, don't quit what you're doing. By the way, there's these guys in England. They banged their heads against the stage when we played. That's where headbanging and bang your head came from.
Right.
Randy and I reporting to Kevin what was actually going on. But, you know, but even with that, the tenacity that Kevin had to have to keep on going in Los Angeles, when at the time the music that not only he was making, but everybody else, I mean, Motley Crue was out there. Rat was out there. You know, Blackie had his own thing going on. Gray White, on the, I think it was called Dante Fox at the time. They had their thing there, but they were still going at it. See, we did not know how to all of a sudden turn around and become punk or new wave. We could be influenced by it, but we would sound like, and that's what 80s metal is. If you put 70s metal and 80s metal in between, there was punk and new wave. So you're going to have this kind of like Black Sabbath, Deep Purple metal, 70s.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden you got the 80s metal. All these guys, including myself, we were playing in the same clubs as all the new wave and punk bands were in LA. You have to be influenced first, because you watch them and you go, shit, these guys are kicking ass on stage. They're just playing like, you know, they're being punk. It's like early Who. Destroying things and, you know, being like very, you know, in your face. You got to bring that to your music. So that in your face attitude was not there in the 70s from metal bands. It came around in the 80s thanks to new wave of punk.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
You know, you just talking about this, it just reminded me, I know you didn't see the documentary, but there was a guy who was teaching Randy guitar lessons, and at one point he came to his mom and says, I can't teach Randy anymore, and she said, why not? He goes, because he's teaching me now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's because, you know, it's rare for me to even think back and say, oh, yeah, I remember Randy not playing a guitar or having a guitar, not having a guitar on him, because he always was playing the guitar, unless we were traveling, like on a plane. You know, you were not allowed to bring your instrument on board or something like that. But given the opportunity, he will be playing.
Yeah, it sounds like my friend John Five. Yeah. He's always noodling.
Oh, Johnny?
Yeah.
You know that I had a band with Johnny when he was 19 years old.
I did not know. Go ahead. Tell me about this. I would have texted him to give you a question. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Johnny. This is before he had a number.
Yeah.
Okay. 1990, at the beginning of the Whitesnake Slip of the Tongue tour, David announces that he was going to put the band on hold and pursue some personal, you know, things that he needed to achieve. And so everybody in the band, you know, especially Steve Vai. Steve Vai was working on his solo career. So yeah. he just crossfaded into that. And what I did is I put a young band together pretty much in what I was doing. I was successful with 80s metal, so I'm going to keep doing this, not knowing that the horizon was grunge.
Yeah, right.
Because it was coming out of Seattle. It was not on the Sunset Strip.
That's right.
It was really far away from Seattle. I mean, from the Sunset Strip in Seattle. So somebody says, hey, check this guy out. He's playing tonight at Gazzari's. So I go, and there's like five people there, you know. My wife and I were just walking in, and so the band comes on, and Gazzari's had the stage. You could actually see people entering the stage from the dressing room, which was upstairs, going down some staircase. And on the way down, and I was not aware of this, but the singer hurts himself on the way down, going down the staircase. So he tells Johnny, do a guitar solo. Kind of like, you know, so he can wrap his head around with a bandage or something, right? So he starts playing a solo, and I'm going, this is incredible. You know, when do you actually hear a band opening up their set with a guitar solo? You know, and so he's just blew me away, and his confidence, his tone, everything about him. He was 19 years old. So we put a band together called Sun King. We got signed to Giant Records, and then grunge happened. I'll never forget this. John comes in. He already knew how to play Teen Spirit. And he goes, and I go to him, and he's like playing, and I'm going, because now I'm frustrated. Because now the record company is like calling us up and saying, you guys got to make some changes musically. And it's like, okay, first of all, in hindsight, if I would have not have had my head stuck up my 80s, but so far away, you know, into, I would have realized, wait a minute, a lot of these bands are very Black Sabbath influenced.
Yeah.
I play with Ozzy. I know where this is coming from. Let me go in that direction. No, but I didn't. You know, I could have, but I didn't. And it would have been great. I would have had a blast, you know, going back into that more like that dark and Black Sabbath, early Sabbath, you know, with Ozzy metal.
Yeah, like Soundgarden. The first time I heard Soundgarden, I'm like, this is like Black Sabbath.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, but I didn't. So we just kept going in that, you know, trying to like convince a record company that you need an 80s metal band because we're coming back.
Well, it's funny that you bring it up back in 1990 or so. And now here in 2023, John Five is going to be touring with Motley Crue.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, he's, you know, of course, with all due respect to Mick, you know, Mick is, you know, founding member of Motley Crue, but right. Mick made the decision because of his health. And we're all aware of that, about his health. You know, so it's a health decision. And also, I know Nicky. Nicky loves, you know, Motley Crue is like oxygen for him, you know. So I am glad that Mick has made he's at peace with his decision, which means that there is a piece of the puzzle missing. And the piece of the puzzle happens to be John Five, and I couldn't think of a better living guitar player than John Five to come in and be a member of Motley Crue. Because one thing about Johnny's always been a fan. Mm-hmm. I know he's a huge fan of Motley Crue.
Right.
So it's nothing better than to have somebody who is actually not doing it for the money, but doing it because they think this is the best gig or the best band they've ever been in.
Yeah. No, John is the best. And there's not a song, I don't think, in the planet that he can't play. Real fast, I just wanted to ask you about this. I'm running out of time here on my Zoom, but Rick Rubin, I just saw this today. He said Paul McCartney is the best bass player of all time. What are your thoughts on that?
I've been saying that before Rick Rubin said it.
Yeah. I think Paul, I just saw a thing just yesterday, Paul saying that The Benefit of Mr. Kite is the best bass line he think he's ever written. And he talked about how he plays it and he has to sing it at the same time. And it's kind of going in different directions. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. Counterpoint. But you know, he's also a piano player.
Right.
So, he's got, playing the bass and playing chords with his left hand and playing with the right hand. So he's got that. He's got an internal clock that very few musicians have. Elton John is one of them. John Bonham, Frankie Benelli had it. It's perfection. You just play to that. Mm. I've never heard McCartney ever play bad. And it's magnificent,
Yeah, he's definitely one of the best. And, I watched that Rick Rubin thing, 3-2-1 on Hulu a few years back. Did you see that one?
Oh, yeah.
And them dissecting the songs was incredible.
Absolutely. And now that I've done a little bit of research, if you go back and watch when Rick Rubin solos the bass line on My Guitar Gently Weeps, and he gives McCartney accolades for it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it so happens that there is a research that's been done to the recording of that song, and it's most likely John Lennon playing a 6-string bass that they just had acquired from Fender at that time, and that they were using in the studio. If you look at the Lennon. What is it? Is it still called Let It Be, or is it called something else? When Jackson came in and redid the Beatles documentary.
Are you talking about Get Back?
Get Back. There you go. Yeah. I originally had it as Let It Be.
Yeah, that's a fantastic documentary as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll see Lennon and George switching over playing that 6-string bass that I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Rudy, thanks so much for the time. Rehab, Relapsed, and Remastered, and congrats on the Metal Hall of Fame. I know we didn't get a chance to touch on that, but that's, you were just there last week, right?
Yeah, but I actually got inducted along with Frankie Benelli.
That's right.
About 5-6 years ago. And yeah, another thing that I want to mention before we go is the fact that we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of Metal Health this year.
Oh, okay. Wow.
40 years.
Wow. Yeah, I can remember as a kid, banging my head out to that one. That's for sure. But man, what memories. Yeah. That's awesome. So when is that going to be released?
No, it's not. You mean the fourth? No, we're just touring.
Oh, touring. Okay. Yeah. Your video got kind of, your video kind of got, okay, I got you. Your video froze up there for a second. I didn't hear exactly what you said. Okay. I got you. Well, listen, send the best out to the band, of course, with Johnny and Jizzy and Alex. Good guys right there. I've never had a chance to meet Jizzy, but man, I loved Love Hate. I got to get him on the show here one day.
Yeah. He's great. He's awesome. Yeah.
One day I'll get Jizzy on the program. I've never had a chance to meet or talk with him, but man, Love Hate, that one record is just fantastic. Love that. Got to get that on vinyl, by the way. So if anybody has any clues on where that might be in the vinyl rack, let me know. Hit me up, meltdown@wrif.com. Hey, thanks so much for joining me. I got a new podcast I'm going to be debuting next week. As a matter of fact, the promo is coming up this week. I'll tell you more about it as it gets closer, but it's pretty cool. And I got my first guest I already did this interview for like an hour. I talked to this one guest about one specific thing. So that's all I'm going to say. But check out my socials at Meltdown WRIF on Twitter and Facebook. And I'll be unveiling that project coming up Thursday or near the end of the week as I record this here on this Tuesday. In the meantime, thanks so much for checking out Talkin' Rock.
Thank you for listening to Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. You can help this podcast grow by giving it a 5-star rating and writing a review on Apple and iTunes. Plus, feel free to subscribe and share it with your friends. Until next time, thanks for listening to Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.